Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe.
And I'm Sue Bird.
We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show.
A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
The Philadelphia 76ers select Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons.
Here comes Simmons between the legs. Embiid! The power for Simmons! Wow, what a play!
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the New Slant Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kyle Newbeck. And this week, our podcast being brought to you by our friends at Bet Online. So thank you to all those guys and gals, for keeping our lights on. With me, as he is every week, this time with the benefit of being down the shore and preparing for a Walt Disney World summer, my buddy, my pal, Seamus Clancy. Seamus, how is the beach, if you've gotten to enjoy it at all yet?
I have not gotten to the beach, just drove down here, literally got here 40 minutes ago, ate a couple of slices of pizza. Now I'm really, really ready to talk Disney World. Might hear a dog bark or two in the background, but that just adds character to the podcast.
Listen, that's, you're getting the uncut raw of the Kyle and Seamus late gems. May.
Did you see Uncut Gems in theaters?
I actually literally just watched it for the first time last night.
All right, so spoilers alert, I saw it in theaters and I really liked it, so just skip like 90 seconds if you haven't seen the movie and you're planning on it. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it a lot. It was very tense. Like, there's just a lot of anxiety throughout the whole movie. It's one of those, like, so I would have hated it if it was a TV show because there's no real break in tension, and I find that makes for
good movie.
Bad TV. But for a movie, I enjoyed it. It's like just over 2 hours of constant tension, and you know that was enough. I thought Adam Sandler was good. I don't know that he deserved the. There's a lot of people who are behind him for like Oscar bids
buzz
and things. I don't know if I would go that far, but I enjoyed him in that role, and I thought overall it was a strong movie. So I would recommend it. If you have a Netflix subscription, go check that out.
Julia Fox is something.
She's a fox, all right.
She's a fox. and my last comment is I'm sad that someone made a movie about the 2012 Eastern Conference semifinals, and it wasn't me.
You know, it's amazing. I was just thinking, watching that movie, how that team managed to go 7 games with that Celtics.
They made a movie about Spencer Hawes.
It makes absolutely no sense. Yeah, Spencer Hawes is heavily involved in one of the key plots of the movie, which is unbelievable.
Thrillers of 2019.
Okay, so yeah, we don't need to do a scene-by-scene breakdown of Uncut Gems, but I would recommend it. On the current day, present day Sixers front, this week, the state of New Jersey, where Seamus is currently, the Governor Phil Murphy announced that restrictions for professional sports teams were being lifted within the state. And so what that means in practical terms is that the Sixers can go back to practice, as can the Flyers. Obviously, this is not a hockey podcast. So the Sixers, starting today, Wednesday, are back in the gym for, not for practices yet, but for individual workouts. There are still lots of restrictions in place. So now these guys have time to, you know, begin to get in shape, get some shots up, because a lot of these guys do not have baskets in their homes because they live in
Ben
High
Simmons
rises
definitely does not have a basket in his home.
Well, I will say, I believe Ben Simmons may have moved to a house shortly before all this started, or maybe right at the beginning of quarantine period, so he might have a hoop at his house. A lot of guys do not, though. So whether he would use it, as you point out, Seamus, is fair to ask.
I'm really excited for Loser of the Week. Just I want everyone to listen through, because it's going to be a good Loser of the Week.
It will be a good Loser of the Week.
I'm scrolling Twitter and I keep seeing a lot about it. So.
Oh my goodness. So practice is not here yet, but workouts are. And all that is eventually going to lead to the resumption of the season, which obviously we have talked about over the past few weeks on the podcast. But I think now there are some concrete ideas that are rising to the surface, being reported on, even, you know, some informed speculation from different outlets. I think one of the more prominent ones right now is the idea that they may just seed 1 through 16 and throw out the conferences, which, you know, that's something that has been popular amongst people who care way too much about basketball for a long time. I say that as someone who does care
people way too much too about online. Basketball. People that are too online on basketball Twitter have been clamoring for this for a while, and I was, you know, I've been a fan of it before. I think it's the most fair. Obviously, I didn't necessarily want to implement it as a big Sixers fan because it is the Eastern Conference and has been for the past 25 years. So
the funny part about the 1 through 16 seeding as it stands right now is that the Sixers would play the same exact team regardless of how they seeded it, and they would get a nice meeting with the familiar Boston Celtics. I guess before we get into like any kind of individual matchups, you're in favor of this idea generally, Seamus, not just this season, but also...
Yeah, Sixers agnostic. I'm a fan of the 1 through 16. Conference realignment, where you have the different conferences for scheduling and for voting for the All-Star team just because of travel. But when it comes to the postseason, you know, it's not fair that the Mavericks are better than, I don't know, who, like the Magic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess my issue, so I'm not against it from a long-term perspective. I think the conference imbalance has been severe enough and over a long enough period of time that, you know, it's tough to stand by the Eastern Conference and rewarding some of these teams for their performances after, you know, this is like multiple decades now of one conference being significantly better than the other. I guess my issue with it this season is that I am kind of opposed to the idea of changing formats generally midstream. Like, yeah, maybe conference imbalance is a bad thing, and we can all agree on that. We can look at the historical data, but you still came into this season playing as if that was what mattered. And so that changes the motivation for teams. That changes, you know, like whether guys are resting, whether guys are doing this, whether guys are doing that. It's just like a totally different season if it plays out that way. And so I think it's kind of cheap to just say, well, you know, we're going to like change things midstream and do this totally differently. I would like to see eventually going 1 to 16 regardless of conference and throwing all that out, because as you pointed out, Seamus, we are far removed from the days where these guys are, you know, flying with regular Joe Schmoes on flights. They're on private jets. They have great hotel accommodations.
Yeah, Bob Ryan sitting next to Larry Bird on flights.
So they don't have to worry about that stuff anymore, especially in a remote environment, as they're probably going to play in for the playoffs this year. But just from a competitive standpoint, I don't like the idea of, you know, dramatically changing things. They already have to make all these changes for, you know, like a neutral site instead of teams having home court advantage and altering the league in that way. So I think anything beyond that is a bridge too far for me.
I mean, if we're already getting crazy with it, let's just keep getting crazy with it. And we'll talk about that later with maybe an even a bolder concept. But I don't know. The thing is, to me, is that there were several teams still in the playoff hunt in the West that could conceivably have made the playoffs. And again, you could just say, well, tough shit. You should have just been in the eighth seed to begin with. But, you know, I don't really want to watch the Magic in the playoffs in a playoff game. I'd much rather watch the Magic. You know what I mean? Like, I'd much rather watch these other teams in there instead. But I don't know.
Like, look, would I rather watch Zion and the Pelicans over Mark Fultz and the Orlando Magic? 100%, without a doubt, it's not even close. But, you know, in the NBA, the whole thing is you play the 82 games so that this, theoretically anyway, so that the teams that best pace themselves and perform the best over that period get advantages and disadvantages if they fail to perform. And it feels like you're by changing the stakes and the format this late, it feels like, oh yeah, you know, we just kind of want to warp this how we want to, and that's kind of anti competition to me. Like, you don't want to be changing things midstream. That's kind of, I guess that's kind of a boomer take.
Yeah, you sound like a strict constitutionalist.
Well, it's funny because, like, in other sports, like, for example, in baseball, I think the lack of willingness to embrace the DH is ridiculous.
Yeah,
I think it's the dumbest fucking thing.
Dumb as shit. I want old, washed up players that I love like 6 or 7 years ago on the Phillies smashing dingers.
Right. And I don't, like, my argument is the same reason essentially that I don't watch college basketball or college sports, I should say. I watch college basketball for prospects, but I don't watch college sports a lot because I don't want to see an inferior version of the product. Like, college football is interesting in that you see a lot of different styles, but NFL players are better. Same thing for the NBA and college basketball. That NBA players are just better. And so if I can watch a baseball game where I have to choose between a team that can just send its 9 best hitters up or a team that the 9th guy in the lineup for the first 6 or so innings of the game is a guy who doesn't really practice hitting and actively sucks at it, well, I think that's kind of an easy choice for me. So I get it.
But then wouldn't your argument be that you'd want more entertaining teams in there because you want more entertaining players in there in the MLB? So wouldn't you rather watch Zion and Luka than Mark Fultz?
Yeah, again, I'm conceding that I would rather watch teams that will probably get left out. I just think I don't like it as a mid-season late addition to what they're doing, I guess, if that makes sense.
I gotcha.
Well, so here's the other
thing. Like, I don't agree, but, like,
yeah, obviously.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. I understand people who feel differently. And, you know, we got into the idea of a possible asterisk on the season or a champion last week.
Anti-asterisk over here.
Right. I am too. But I think that is also opening it up to asterisk talk. Like, any major change to the format, it's not going to matter to me either way. Whoever wins, wins. And they played under the circumstances that they were handed. Obviously, this is not something anybody could have really planned for, especially professional athletes who are creatures of habit and routine. But I think you'll see a lot more people who want to discredit any kind of title winner if they don't win it in a fashion that resembles champions who came before them.
Yeah, it's not going to be their fault they didn't hold the Utah Jazz to 54 points in a finals game and didn't play the Indiana Pacers and the Knicks and the Browns before them.
So here's a question. Since our Sixers Celtics would happen under either format, they are currently matched up for a playoff matchup in the East, or they would still be the, I think it's the 5-12 matchup in the 1-16 seeding, something like that. Am I remembering that correctly, Shane?
You're correct. They would be the 3-6 or the 5-12. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that obviously does not impact the Sixers in this way.
Sixers are fucked either way.
But would you care as a fan if we went 1-16 and the possibility of all these old and historic rivalries just get kind of thrown out the window for the sake of getting the best teams in every year?
See, like, I think rivalries change, and rivalries are so not necessarily dependent on teams and history as much as they are dependent on players, in the sense that, you know, what was the best rivalry of the last handful of the years in the NBA? It was Cavaliers versus the Warriors. It was LeBron versus Steph, and then eventually LeBron versus Steph and KD. You know, they didn't face each other until the finals. And, you know, I think it's just so homogenized now in the way stars are the league more so than the players that it doesn't really affect me. You're going to find entertaining narratives. These players know each other so well. The league is so, you know, brand conscious and does a fantastic job marketing themselves. The players do that all throughout social media and interact with one another and talk shit on one another, that I don't think it really matters. Like, and then at the end of the day, we're going to still face the Celtics either way. So, and somehow that's going to be a thing. But it's fine with me. We're going to have But that's the thing. There's always new rivalries. There's new things. You could have a situation where, you know, a great young player in the East might have to play a great young player in the West, you know, sooner than they would have met in the finals, you know, 5 years later or something like that. I think that's an intriguing storyline.
So I think I mostly agree with you, though. I saw, like, you know, I monitor what people think, what people are saying about given topics, and I follow people from fan bases all over the league. Something I thought was interesting was I saw some Lakers fans point out that, you know, part of the significance of Lakers Celtics is that the only way they're ever going to meet in the playoffs is in the finals, and that it wouldn't feel the same if, you know, the Lakers Celtics play in round two. And so if you extend that to, you know, just the Eastern Conference and you look at Sixers Celtics as a rivalry, part of the reason that that rivalry means so much is that those teams are and were often the biggest obstacles just to get out of the East. And the effect that had was that it erased a lot of great Sixers teams from history or great Celtics teams from history because they couldn't even get out of the conference. And I think that's like a powerful thing that you might lose if you're just going 1 through 16 every year. Now, maybe it would end up that.
What if in the past, though, the two best teams were truly the Sixers and the Celtics, and that we missed out on those, like, you know, that should have been the finals or that should have been a matchup earlier. Like, maybe the Lakers aren't deserving of the automatic walk to the championship that it got frequently in the 80s.
Well, maybe they weren't, but that has happened. That has flipped now, where like the Lakers had essentially, I wouldn't call it a free walk, but a mostly free walk through a lot of the 80s outside of some challenges from the Rockets at different points in the
two different iterations of the Rockets. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, it was pretty much they were untested for a lot of that decade compared to, I mean, even let's say outside of Philadelphia and Boston, even that Bucks team in the 80s was really
good. That's a forgotten team. I like that team. Marcus Johnson, you know, Sidney Moncrief. I think they had some talented people that would actually be, might even play better in today's game.
Right. So, you know, I don't know. I think that's part of sports. It isn't always fair. And some people's legacies get erased. And that's just how history shakes out. Maybe, I guess in this way, I am kind of a boomer where I just do enjoy the traditional aspects of how things are set up, even if it's a little hokey in some ways. I'm not anti 1 through 16, and if they go that way, I agree with you. I think natural organic rivalries will spring up. I guess my concern would be, so you brought up LeBron versus the Warriors, which I think absolutely was an outstanding rivalry. But like once LeBron is done, once this Warriors run is over, that rivalry is not going to have staying power. Nobody's going to look back at that.
Yeah, but it's all star-based. Then it's just, you're going to have different stars have different rivalries, and they may be interconference, they may be intra-conference.
I just think I enjoy some of the pageantry and the history of
And I don't disagree. I think of myself as an NBA historian. I love reading, you know, my favorite thing to read, you know, no matter what genre, is a nonfiction NBA history book. And, you know, I love it. I love the traditions. I probably value the Sixers Celtics rivalry more than, you know, I'm 26, most people in our generation, where they might just think of it, oh, you know, Kevin Garnett and the 2012 things. Whereas I love reading about Andrew Toney and then the Celtics trading for Dennis Johnson to stop Andrew Toney. But do the kids, like, do you know what I mean? Like, in music and sports and movies and all these things, television, the kids are always right in the end. You know what I mean? Like, what they want and what they think is right ultimately wins out. So if you know, the younger generation really doesn't care about this, and the next generation of wave of fans that's eventually going to be, you know, the next generation of journalists and bloggers and season ticket holders don't really care, maybe we really shouldn't care.
Yeah, I guess maybe I feel it's our responsibility as people older than them.
Then we turn into the boomers.
It's not trying to force them to like a certain thing. But for example, the reason that I grew up hating the Cowboys is because my dad emphasized
the NFL's how much different. He hated the
Cowboys. Well, how is it? It's still a sport. It's something that you harbor by playing the same
divisions,
team.
Because divisions matter. And you play those teams twice a year, and you don't play any other teams twice per year besides those three teams. There's less of a season. It's only 16 games.
I understand that part of it. But all I'm saying is we wouldn't hate the Cowboys in Philadelphia if it wasn't something that was handed down from older people. That's something that you like were taught to care about.
But the Sixers and Celtics could both be the two best teams in the league and make the playoffs. And like, do you know what I mean? Frequently, it's just the Eagles or the Cowboys make the playoffs.
Well, that's how it's shaken out. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, it's not like Dallas can't make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's happened in 2017, and I think the last time it happened was in 2009. It happened maybe twice in my lifetime, twice since 1995. So it's happened three times in my lifetime. It's not like a common thing. It's usually Eagles or the Cowboys. You beat Dallas, and you go 5-1, then you can probably win a division. It's not like, oh shit, the Sixers. How many times do they even play the Celtics?
Well, the Sixers and Celtics haven't been both good at the same time for
because it doesn't
like,
matter in basketball.
4 decades.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not the same.
No, you're making my point for me. You're saying that they're not in the playoffs and good at the same time. Most of the time, neither are the Sixers and Celtics. It's
but
the
they
same
have
thing.
Been in historically. If there was like a 30-year period where they were.
Yeah, in when? 1980 and 1960?
Yeah, that's 30 years.
I'm just saying it's basically the same thing. Most of the time, it's either the Eagles are good or the Cowboys are good. Either the Sixers are good or the Celtics are good. On the rare times that both matter, that takes the rivalry to new heights. And that's why I'm fighting for the rivalry. It's not because
I need to go
constant.
Find an apple and I need to go find an orange. And then I'm going to FaceTime you and hold them to both the fuck up.
Rivalries matter to me. That's all I'm saying. All right, Seamus. Well,
I think we need to hear from. Our friends at BetOnline.
Well, I bet you that if I told you we should seed the NFL with no conferences, and that meant that the Eagles never played the Cowboys again, you would care.
Yeah, but you schedule still based on conference.
You scheduled the NBA based on conference. You play teams more in your own conference.
I think that's totally fine because a lot of it's based on travel.
All right. Well, you're never going to agree with me on this, so we'll move on. We'll talk about our sponsor. We'll be right back. So, guys, once again, I'm here to tell you about our friends at BetOnline. There's no shortage of action going on with our exclusive partners. NASCAR is back, and BetOnline has hundreds of other games, events, and sports to get in on. You can still bet on simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC events 24/7, or you can participate in a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge, a March Madness-style NFL simulation tournament that you can enter for free. And live right now on BetOnline's YouTube channel, you'll find an exclusive interview with ex-Chicago Bulls Ron Harper, Horace Grant, Bill Cartwright, and Craig Hodges to discuss the Michael Jordan documentary on what they're calling The Final Dance. So visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus and check out all the action. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
Did you bet on the match? Whatever the match two, whatever it's called.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I didn't watch a single fucking second.
I'm not a golf guy
in the
slightest. I never watched golf. I like the idea of Tiger Woods. Have never played a round of golf in my life. But I watched. There wasn't a lot on. I like the Peyton Manning Tom Brady rivalry. A rivalry not based in any sort of tradition, just because they had two good players and they became rivals. More of a Peyton Manning guy. I love that show. Peyton's Place is on ESPN Plus. So I watch it. But I bet on Tom Brady and Phil because they had better odds and didn't win. So,
wow. Yeah, you know, I would have bet on Peyton if I was a betting man, strictly on the logic that he's had more time to relax and play golf than Tom has had up to this point. But I did not waste a single second of my time on that. I'm not making fun of anybody who did because we are in desperate times in terms of content and programming right now. But I don't really love watching golf in normal times.
But there was a lot of chattiness that I think is missing from traditional golf.
That's what I heard. I did see that Peyton.
I mean,
Tom.
I'm sure you saw like the clips of the Eagles, you know.
Yes.
And Nick Foles shit.
Yeah. Well, listen. I think Peyton Manning, despite the fact that he probably didn't win as much as a guy that was as good as he was should have, I think he is a great personality. Like,
oh my
he's
god,
awesome
yeah.
on TV.
He could
he
do
always good
TV
at ads.
That's not even sports. He could do like he could just go on Good Morning. He could do the Strahan route, I think, if you were Mod Rashad route, if you really wanted to.
Yeah, I think I really enjoy him just as a guy. Obviously, that seems like it came out for based on what I saw. I didn't watch any of it. I must emphasize this, but the memes and the video clips and the things that made it to social media, I enjoyed, and I'm glad that Peyton got the last laugh in this one because never been a Brady guy personally.
Nah, obviously. Well, not even just the Eagles-Patriots stuff. He's just such a, you know, the TB12 BS. I hate it all.
Wait, by the way, this reminded me, now that Peyton Manning came up, his version of detail, 100 times better than the ones that the NBA guys have done. Whether that's Kobe or any of the other guys that have put him out since then.
His Wentz one against, it's the week four game from the 2019 season where they went on to Green Bay on Thursday Night Football and won. He did one on Wentz. It was really, really informative. He's just a great personality and obviously has a, you know, close to unrivaled football mind.
Yeah, he's exceptional at that. So I would like to see, I will consume more Peyton Manning content. I'll put it that way.
Absolutely.
Back on brand here. Another idea that's been floated, I believe most prominently by the Ringer's Kevin O'Connor, and I think he reported that this was something that the league has in different forms talked about, but the idea of a group stage round robin type format to open the playoffs. And so I'll do my best here to describe it. For those of you who haven't read the article or seen this discussed anywhere else, essentially you would take 20 teams and you would take four teams for five different tiers. So the tier one, for example, would be the teams with the four best records. Right now, that would be Bucks, Lakers, Raptors, Clippers. And so none of those teams could be put into the same group together. You go through each tier of four teams through five tiers, and you would have some sort of lottery system and distribute the teams so that they end up in groups of five. You would play eight games in each group, and the top two teams would move on from each group. And so it would give the teams in the top tiers the advantage of not having to play the other top teams. That's obviously a little bit of incentive for teams that are losing home court advantage because of everything that's happening right
now.
That
really screws the Sixers, huh?
Yeah.
For those home games, they would have got a dub.
Yeah. It allows more teams to be included, which that helps with the teams that are fringe Western Conference playoff teams that, based on these current circumstances, we're not going to be able to fight for a playoff spot over the Grizzlies, who I believe are the current eight seed out west. And it's also just something that adds multiple layers of intrigue. First, with you would probably do a selection show, would be amazing, would get like crazy ratings, I'm sure. And then on top of that, that's the eight games for each group. That's given you a ton of material to work with over what I would imagine would be a several week span. So I guess, Seamus, what are your thoughts on it as a general idea, and how do you see that impacting the Sixers compared to, you know, like a normal format or even the 1-16 idea?
I don't like it. I love it. I just like the situation this season has just had already a crazy, unprecedented, you know, once in a generation, once in a lifetime event thrown into it, and there's this gigantic hiccup. So why not try something different? If it fails, you're just like, well, it was the quarantine year, it was the COVID year, you know, we had to try something different because it wasn't going to work out. And if it works out, you might have an entire change to the basketball ecosystem as we know it. If there's ever a time they're going to be experiment with how we conduct basketball, if you want to change the idea of playoff basketball, people are think that's kind of stale. And I think, you know, the first and even second round of the NBA playoffs have grown pretty stale. And, you know, this is the thing going on a couple of decades now. This is the perfect time to try something different. And I just say that as, you know, from a pure basketball fan perspective, as, you know, a Sixers agnostic perspective. But even more so, for this specific season, at least, I like it for the Sixers. I don't, you know, I'm kind of pro having them avoid, you know, having to face Boston in the first round just feels like I'm not ready for that type of mental anguish, and I just would rather prefer to avoid it. We could discuss Kevin O'Connor's proposed bracket, where the Sixers are a Tier 3 team. So they would play one team from Tier 1, which is the Bucks, one team from Tier 2, which could be the Jazz, one team from Tier 4, which could be the Grizzlies, and then one team from Tier 5, which could be the Blazers. And I think that's a great draw for them. You know, I like their odds against the Bucks surprisingly more than their odds for the other three Tier 1 teams, the Lakers, Raptors, and Clippers. I think they play Utah pretty well, and I like the narrative there with the Rudy Gobert, Joel, Donovan Mitchell, Ben stuff. I think that's pretty entertaining. And then, you know, I think they could beat the crap out of the Grizzlies, and, you know, maybe Dame goes off, or maybe the Sixers beat off the Blazers inside. I think if we get that specific draw, could really be good for them, though. You could probably talk about this a little bit more, and talking about some of my friends who are, you know, bigger soccer fans than I am, and probably close to your level, is that the U.S. are in that Team USA mold where they're either the shittiest good team or the best bad team, and kind of are in that middle ground, because the Sixers are like the top Tier 3 team, so they're not quite Tier 2, but they're not as bad as Tier 4, and they're just kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit. It depends on who they draw, obviously, but that's the, I guess, the flip side. That's the concern with something like this, where they could get, you know, into a World Cup-esque group of death, and we just say, oh, the league fucking hates Philly, and do our host spiel like that.
Right, so here's the flip side of that. You named the bracket as KOC had it shaking out.
And it could change that. It could be totally different.
It could be totally different. And just as an example, using the same tiers that he used, they could end up in a group where they would play the Lakers, Celtics, Mavericks, and let's just say the Pelicans, even though I think they would handle the Pelicans. But saying you would have to play the Lakers and Celtics and then Luka Doncic just to get out of the first round, that's not a lot of fun. That's a lot of tough competition, teams that have given them problems at different times this year. So, again, it all depends on the draw. And I think that's part of the intrigue of going to a format like this. I personally would be more inclined to do 1 through 16 over this, because I think, you know, you brought up, Seamus, that part of this is, well, this season's already screwed up anyway, so who cares? We don't need to worry about asterisks or whatever else. We just have to find a way to finish the season. What I would be trying to accomplish is, yes, you want to accomplish the season, but you also want to experiment with something that maybe you might actually go to in the future. I don't think the NBA is ever realistically going to go to a World Cup style playoff every year. That doesn't seem realistic. I do think that 1 through 16 is something that's gotten a lot of traction and has already generated a lot of discussion, not just on the outside and publicly, but something that's been discussed internally, certainly by owners around the Western Conference that are sick of getting boxed out by shitty teams like the Orlando Magic or like the Brooklyn Nets in previous years. So that's where I would say I support 1 through 16 more. I think this would obviously be a ton of fun, because I think the group play format every World Cup and Champions League, all that, there's all kinds of intrigue every time. Unfortunately, unlike in Champions League, you wouldn't be getting the environment of going for a one game in a hostile road environment, because if you had a group stage format that was actually like a normal NBA setting, and you're like, let's say they had the group of death that we discussed, let's say they had to go to LA for a game, then to Boston for a game, and like all these teams have to come to Philly for one game, and maybe there's just one game between Boston and Philly that's going to decide whether one team moves on or not. That would be great theater, because that's like the hottest ticket that you could put. Essentially like a game 7, and the environment around that would be crazy. So that, like, I think the drama and the pageantry and all that, all the stuff that I talked about caring about, I think you can replicate that in a group play format. I think it's something that might draw in casual fans, or maybe Absolutely. Even people that aren't necessarily diehard, not even necessarily basketball fans, are just interested in them doing something new. But at the same time, I do think that there's such a thirst for sports right now that no matter what you're going to do, people are going to turn in and watch this. And I think, to circle back to earlier in the conversation, I think the match between Brady and Manning, Tiger and Phil, kind of proves that, because even that was a ratings juggernaut.
Would you be okay losing the Jazz Rockets rivalry?
So I have to say, I have enjoyed Rudy Gobert being turned into a pumpkin every year by the Rockets.
Well, I'm even going back to like 95, 96, 97.
We don't even need to go back that far. Yes, those years were great, but mostly the Jazz won. At least they got to the finals in the years that people think actually mattered, because for whatever reason, those Rockets titles are essentially treated like they never happened because of...
Jordan was there the one year.
He was. He did still have all his like baseball muscle on.
He was still steroided up a little bit.
I love the part of Last Dance where they talk about that. Like, yes, you do have to train different muscles, and yes, maybe Michael Jordan wasn't in optimal basketball shape.
He must be the best basketball player of all time.
If you look at his numbers in that Magic series, he still put up like 31-5-6 or something ridiculous. So, I don't think it's an excuse for why they lost that year. I think it would have been very difficult for Michael Jordan to win 8 consecutive titles. I don't think that's that much of a hot take.
Looking at a minimum 8-peat, as they would say on SNL.
But yeah, so I think it's an intriguing idea, and I'm sure it's one of those things that a lot of fans and even media members are going to advocate for. I just think that they would be better served, if they're going to change the format at all, to experiment with something that maybe they're considering changing for the long term of the league, just to see how that shakes out and see how people respond to it.
Yeah, because you think like the 1-16 no conference thing is probably more realistic as a future thing. Okay, yeah, I'm just trying to understand your perspective. I'm not criticizing, just asking.
Yeah, no, I think that is something that's closer to being made reality, and so that if you're going to mess with it at all, at least mess with it in a way that gives you a starting point for the future. Because, look, do you think it's at all realistic to think that the league will just permanently transition to group stage round one? Is that something the NBA would ever do?
If it goes really well, who knows?
Yeah,
What if it's just the ratings bonanza?
Maybe, but I think anything's going to be a ratings bonanza right now, personally.
I don't know.
Speaking of bonanzas, I don't know if this is actually a bonanza. This is probably a terrible thing. We are now moving on to Seamus's favorite segment of the week this week, the Rudy Gobert Loser of the Week Award. I believe Seamus has a nominee for us, and I don't think I will disagree with him that much, so take it away, my friend.
And this is one of the Loser of the Weeks. I wish I didn't have to give out this award. You know what I mean? Like, I usually really enjoy this, and I told people later on, because, you know, still listen to it, because I think it's important. Loser of the Week is Michael Porter Jr. for telling people on Twitter to pray for the police officers who killed, what is that guy's first name? His last name is Floyd.
George Floyd.
George Floyd in Minneapolis. Embarrassing. It was the first time he tweeted since Valentine's Day, and he went like on a 4 or 5 tweet spree about this, and it's just like, read the fucking room, dude.
Listen,
have a sense of self-awareness, have a sense of decency.
I say this with all sensitivity for people who are devout Christians and whatever, Hindu, Buddhist, Islam, and whatever religion you practice. I get that brings people comfort and people process tragedy differently, but not a time where you need to be offering prayers to the people who perpetrated a heinous act. Like, you can pray for people that are impacted by things and look out for your neighbor and all the things that every religious text in the world teaches you, but when an innocent person is murdered by police in plain sight, and that's the best you got, is to offer prayers for the officers, that's not something I'm going to get down with anytime soon. So, you know, my message here would be to look out for everyone, people of color in your community, people from different backgrounds, your own friends, family, check on people, and don't say dumb shit in the aftermath of a tragedy. That's the real takeaway here for me.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, I was never a fan of Michael Porter Jr., and then he had to make me like him even less. So that is the quintessential loser of the week.
He's like not a loser of the week. He's just a true flat out loser.
Yeah, listen, man. Like I said, I get that people turn to their faith for
which I respect, but like you have to read the room.
Yeah, I don't. And here's the other thing: I think he thought he was trying to help. I don't think it was like
he was trying to do like a play both sides. You know what I mean, like type thing.
Yeah, I don't. And here's the thing: I don't know that it's like a you got to hear both sides thing, because he did tweet earlier before that it was murder what happened to George Floyd. So he obviously was not like trying to excuse what they did. I just think there are people, and this is not just religious people, I think there are people who believe that prayer is a substitute for action, and I don't think that those things are mutually exclusive. I think there are, and you can apply this to politicians in our country and around the world, that, you know, obviously it's now turned into a meme, the whole idea of thoughts and prayers. And I think the reason that people get so mad when they hear that, rightfully so, is because too often it's only thoughts and prayers. You obviously can offer, you know, guidance and spiritual strength to people in times of crisis, and that's okay. But if you're not also willing to do the work that is involved to make your community, your city, your state, your country, your world a better place, then ultimately those are hollow prayers that nobody needs. And so my message would be to try to back up your prayers with action and something that's meant to make the world a better place, not just for yourself, but a lot of other people. So I'm going to end it on that note.
And that's a poignant end note to end on, Kyle.
So hopefully Seamus gets a tan at the beach this week.
The weather's shit. I'm just kind of going down here to relax and just, you know, disconnect from the city for a little bit. They're in one of those little developments, and, you know, I'm going to work from home tomorrow and Friday, and then, you know, have some drinks and enjoy myself and, you know, check out the ocean breeze.
Hey, by the way, before we sign off here, the Roy Halladay documentary is dropping on Friday night, and I actually got a screener for it this week. It's looking pretty good. So
seems like there is some serious content out there, for meaning like, you know, grave content for people. Just a heads up for people who are watching it. From
yeah, a lot of a look dark, into Roy stuff. Halladay behind the scenes that I didn't know we were going to get this soon. And I would recommend it. And if you're not doing that, I hope you guys are all staying safe, healthy, regardless. And we will talk to you again next week.
Yeah, hopefully we have some more concrete NBA news for them.
We shall see. See you, buddy.
See ya.